open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another edition of Bison Report Radio. I am your host, Ross Uglum, the publisher of that very fine website for 24/7 Sports, and I am bringing you today a phenomenal draft special. Happy draft day, everybody. What an exciting weekend to be a Bison. What an incredible weekend for their brand. I know it's been tough, seeing multiple players leave for FBS programs, kids hit the portal, playing a kind of a joke of a spring season, et cetera, et cetera. Had everybody feeling kind of small time, I think. Everybody felt a little small time. The FBS horn has never been blown louder than it has this spring. And opportunity to feel pretty big time again this weekend. You're likely have a chance here to see two North Dakota State athletes drafted tonight. And if that doesn't happen for Dylan Radins, he's going to go really early on Friday night, and he's going to be joined shortly thereafter by Jabril Cox. And then North Dakota State is going to be on ESPN. Not ESPN2, not ESPN3, not ESPN+, the regular old ESPN, at 2 p.m. on Sunday. And just a phenomenal way for this program to kind of show its worth and improve the brand. And it's a brand that's taken a little bit of a hit, but a strong brand nonetheless, and still the top one in the FCS. There's no question about that. All right, so today what we have for you is, first we're going to lead off with Kansas State offensive line coach Connor Riley. Many of you remember Coach Riley was the leader of the Rams for a long time when I believe he moved over from fullbacks and tight ends coach to become the offensive line coach when the transition from Craig Bohl to Chris Kleiman happened. Riles went with Chris to Manhattan, get a little closer to home, and obviously, you know, get that wonderful salary increase that comes from going to the Missouri Valley Football Conference to the Big 12. But he was a key part in the recruitment and the development of Dylan Radins, and has a very unique and expert opinion and perspective on number 75 and what he might do for an NFL team moving forward. All right. Here is my interview with Connor Riley. So anyway, I want to kind of go back to the beginning a little bit, because that was what really struck me is when Dylan got onto campus. I just saw him as a 19-year-old kid, and it was like, boy, God built you to play left tackle.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you looked at Dylan and his history as a, you know, going back to high school, was he was primarily a defensive lineman his junior year, with playing some spot offensive line, quote unquote, and some games that count just a little bit more because they're so successful there at Becker High School. And there was a little bit of projection. But when you looked at the combination of size, speed, and athleticism, you knew right away that, hey, this is a guy who can be not only impactful, but he can be dominant on the offensive line. And so much projection has to go into offensive linemen these days. But the things that you're not teaching, he obviously has. And we had an opportunity to get him up to camp, work with him at camp, and just how coachable he was, how quickly he picked up on things, was so impressive. And, you know, we had a few opportunities to get him on the board drill, and I looked at Coach Kleiman, and I started smiling. I started laughing and made us want the young man even more. And as you continue to get to know his personality and his makeup, his family, it's just what a phenomenal, phenomenal young man. He's a total package. But you're absolutely right. He's 254 pounds when he came to camp. He is probably about, you know, right around 260 when he stepped on campus. And obviously Jim Cramer and nature took hold. And before you know it, you've got somebody who's just so athletic and so dominant that, you know, how quickly was he getting picked up on things? That was the biggest question.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that. I always wondered why, because you go back just in our history and look at 24/7 Sports, and he was listed as a strong side defensive end. I always found that interesting, but it's good to kind of finally get an explanation on that. Does some really dominant things as a redshirt freshman in that Mississippi Valley State game. You guys win by 100, but he blows out his knee. What were those conversations like, and how did he kind of stay locked in after a setback like that?
Going into that particular game and working throughout fall camp, it was very evident the impact that Dylan was going to have on our football team, on our offensive line, within our plans, you know, continue to move forward throughout the course of the year. And I remember the conversations prior to that game. I just continued to tell Dylan, I said, hey, I'm looking for you to continue to trigger. And you are talented enough to be the starter at left tackle as a redshirt freshman at North Dakota State. But I still want to see just a little bit more. So prior to that game, I told him, you know, you're not going to get the start. And well knowing that he was going in on the second or third series, you had an opportunity. It was 16 plays he played in that game. And you had the opportunity to see what type of football player he could become. And when I saw him land out on a football field, obviously my heart was broken for the young man. And he was so frustrated. He was so frustrated. And the conversations he and I had were the fact that he had been through so much adversity already at that point in his life with the loss of his father. I said, this is going to be peanuts. This is going to be easy for you to overcome. And the conversations he and I had were, you need to leverage this setback in order to make you a better football player and to make you a better man. I said, this game at times we all take for granted. And, you know, you've been doing it since you're in junior high, since you're in grade school, you're going to high school, you have success, you have this whole plan mapped out in your mind that you're going to be a dominant offensive lineman playing 3 or 4 years for the Bison, and that went away in a blink of an eye. And I said, you need to really take a step back and grow and see how much this game truly does mean to you, because once it is taken away, which it was taken away for a short period of time, then you can gain a greater appreciation for your love of the game of football, for your love of the process. There were undoubtedly some tears. There was conversations with Dylan's mother, who, if you haven't had an opportunity to meet or spend time with, you want to talk about a dynamic human being and a tough, tough cookie. They don't get much better than Rado's mom. And it was about staying the course. It was about being patient with things, but staying the course. And you saw him grow up so much as a football player during that time after he did tear his ACL.
It is one of the great regrets of my time covering North Dakota State that I will only get to see Trey Lance play 17 times and only get to see Dylan Radins play 33. you go back and look at, you know, how many games Joe Haig played in, and you even talk about the safeties like Duds and Heagles and those guys where you got 55, 56 games. It's such an odd time that we live in, that young man only got to play 32 games for the Bison or 33 games for the Bison.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you look at Trey Lance and you look at Dylan Raidens, or even you look at Jabril Cox. And those three individuals came into North Dakota State when the program was in a little bit different of a trajectory, quite honestly. And the fact that there was some established football players. I mean, even you look at Carson Wentz, you know, how many games he actually started for the Bison. And, you know, sitting behind some very talented football players as opposed to some of those others that you mentioned, that they were probably forced to mature just a little bit quicker. And not that they wouldn't have, they're any less of a player or any greater of a player, but it's an interesting thing because the program in 2015, 2016 was just in a little bit different place than probably the program was in 2010, 2011. So you certainly appreciate the heck out of the time that you had around those young men and so many others who may have had to wait their time, maybe for a number of different reasons, maybe because of injury, maybe because they're playing behind Easton Stick, you know, or playing behind Nick DeLuca and Chris Board, who are a little bit more just a little bit more experience. But yeah, you look at it and it is truly mind-boggling the impact that some of these names you mentioned had in such a short period of time.
Connor, what is it? Because you have to go back, past Paul Kornick. You have to go back in history a long time before you talk about a left tackle at North Dakota State that didn't get a shot at the pros. And not even just get a shot, I mean succeed. You got Joe Haig just signing another contract. Billy Turner making $7 million a year with the Packers. Dylan Raiden's about to become a very wealthy young man. What is it about that spot? What is it about the Rams that just the pros can't get enough of?
Well, I think there's a number of different things. And it's a question that you ask. It's a question that other football coaches ask. It's a question that's very unique. And one of the things that really you pinpoint is the style of offense and the style of play that you're going to have at North Dakota State. And it has been a physical style of play as long as I can remember. And, you know, you go back 15 years, you can go back 20 plus years to when I was playing against the Bison in the Division II days. And how many of those offensive linemen, the Chuck Claybos of the world, that they, too, had shots playing in the NFL. And so I do think that it is a little bit of the style of offense, the mentality, the way that young kids are developed that is very unique. There's numerous times that the style of football in college football continues to evolve. It continues to change. Numerous NFL scouts, numerous NFL coaches have called and said, please, please continue doing the style of offense that you guys do at North Dakota State. And I know what, you know, Craig Bull has continued to do at Wyoming and what we're doing ultimately down here at Kansas State. And there is, you do teach them football. You know, you're going to run zone schemes, you're going to run gap schemes, from protections, you're going to do play action protection and, you know, five-step protection, that's five-man and six-man protection where guys are making adjustments up front. There's a certain savviness that offensive linemen and that style of offense have to have that I do think translates very much so to the next level. And you know, shoot, something so simple, you have all those guys you mentioned getting a three-point stance. It's amazing to me the challenges of some of these offensive linemen transitioning into the next level, where hell, they haven't played in a 3-point stance, whether it be high school or now even going into college. So I think the brand of offense is a big part of it. And also the type of young man you're getting, young kids who the philosophy of recruiting has always been long, lean athletes. And you get long, lean athletes of the Billy Turners of the world, the Joe Higgs of the world, the Dylan Radins of the world. And, you know, that translates very much into the next level. You'd be remiss by not giving credit to the developmental part of things with Jim Cramer and his program and how he goes about challenging young people and so much of his time with him. So it's a combination of so many different things that I think translates into great success at the next level.
Yeah, you spend your entire high school career and your entire college career in the air raid, and all of a sudden it's a little bit tougher of a transition. I want to talk to you about the transition because, you know, Dylan is a guy where it sure seems like he does absolutely everything he can to weigh more than 299 pounds. And I think that has drawn into question his position at the next level. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but you've seen folks that like him at guard. I've talked to a ton of folks that love him at center. Where do you, do you let him quote unquote fail at left tackle before you move him inside, or what would you think that Rado would do at the next level?
You know, I think that exactly what you just talked about is going to create such a great career for Dylan Radins, and that goes into the versatility. So the value of the tackle position in the NFL, yeah, I do think, to me, you start him out at tackle. Now, that depends on what people's needs are, what they have, everything else. But when you look at the versatility of a young man who can play guard, who can, you know, A.J. Blazek did a great job of working in that center. And him having that ability of continuing to be that versatile, you know, it's pretty typical that an NFL team is only going to dress 8 offensive linemen. And, you know, if someone were to go down, obviously you do not have backup, so to speak, at every single position. So him having that versatility is only going to increase the value that he gives to any said NFL football team. He's an extremely savvy football player. You know, his weight, I know with us, he was as high as 310, 311. I think I peaked at his pro day that he is at 302 or 303 pounds. I could be mistaken by a pound or two, but he's got the athleticism. And if you look at a lot of the offensive lines around the country, there's not as many 330, 340 pound offensive linemen as one might think. And, you know, they're athletic. They know how to use leverage. They got great feet. They can bend. They can change direction. They can do all those things. And Dylan's going to provide, to me, he's going to provide, you know, opportunity at each one of those positions. You look at a guy like Joe Haig. You know, Joe Haig has started, including the preseason game, has started a game at every single position along the offensive line. And we saw last year he was playing tight end. So how much value does that bring to a football team? And I think those are things that all those programs, all those franchises are really looking at.
I think ultimately, too, the rise of the Alex Gibbs, Shanahan zone blocking system and being okay with athletic, you know, 300-pound offensive linemen instead of 340-pound offensive linemen is only going to help the young man. I think it's the idea that some of the more successful NFL teams are running that is good for him. Last one, and then I'll let you go here, Riles. You are called by a director of college scouting or by a general manager and saying, give me your top Dylan Radins pick. Why should I use my first round pick on this young man? Why is Dylan Radins good for my football team? I'm just gonna let you go.
Yeah, well, to me, it not only the things that you see on film that, quite honestly, they speak for themselves. He's physical. He's athletic. He's extremely coachable. All those things that you and I can easily come to the conclusion on just by watching his film. But get to know the young man. Get to know his desire to be great. Get to know what makes him tick, that he has great balance in his life. He is a guy who is never going to embarrass a franchise. I can tell you that firsthand, what a phenomenal young man he is. His preparation and his work ethic, to me, are the things that tip him over the top when you're saying, okay, he's a fringe, first round, second round, wherever type guy he may be. It's get to know the character of the young man and how big that burn is inside of him to excel, not to survive, but to be dominant. And it's one of the things I truly witnessed in my last year in Fargo was him taking that next step, turning that corner, and the opportunities I had to watch him in 2019, it was a continuation of that. So it's the athleticism, the physicality, the versatility that he provides along an offensive line are all great, tangible, measurable qualities. When you look at the character of this young man and his desire to be great in who he is, to me, he's a home run. He's a sure thing for you.
All right. Thanks, Coach, and best of luck in the spring and then obviously in the fall.
I really appreciate it, and always good talking to you.
We definitely want to thank Riles for his time. He did just a great job there and making himself available for that much time. We really, really appreciate that. And, again, like, it's very, very, very much appreciated. He just did such a great job of pulling back the curtain there on Dylan and really giving his honest opinion. We wish him nothing but success in the fall season in the Big 12, no doubt about that. All right, joining us now is none other than the head man, Matt Entz, Coach Jabril Cox, as a linebackers coach, as a defensive coordinator, as a head coach, recruited Jabril Cox. I don't know if I could have got a better guest to talk about Jabril Cox that was not Jabril Cox himself, and we're going to play that for you right now. All right, Coach, let's go back in time because I think it was a really unique recruitment. Jabril was a really high-caliber athlete, but a quarterback and also a player coming off of an ACL injury. So I think you guys were in kind of a unique position to go down to the Kansas City area and get that kid.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. All those things, you know, there was some just not, I don't want to say red flags, but just question marks. What was Jabril going to be at the collegiate level? Had a ton of athleticism, coming off an injury. How does that affect him? Played mostly offense, played quarterback. Didn't feel he was a quarterback. Anyone who told him so, we knew we're lying. That wasn't what he was going to be at the collegiate level. And you know, we just went to jumped in with both feet and went after it and told him these are the things that we could provide for you. And I think, you know, the couple, two, three times I was down there on a home visit, it was, we'll get a degree. You're going to get an opportunity to play a lot of football and you're going to get an opportunity to win championships. And I think those things resonated with him and his parents.
I had a relationship with a good relationship with Christian Dudzik after he was done at North Dakota State, and being an Omaha kid, he knew Easton Stick really well. And Easton always tells the story about Jabril's first couple days in practice and just wondering where in the world this kid came from. How quickly did it kind of resonate with everybody on the defensive staff that they had a dude for sure?
Well, I think when you saw the movement skills and the ability to cover ground and how long, I mean, he's almost 6'4". You know, when he originally arrived, we tried to, you know, I tried to play him at Mike linebacker a little bit just to see, you know, because we thought, man, he might fill out. You know, he came here at 216, left here about 235, you know, and thought, man, what a rangy Mike linebacker he could provide us. But I you know, that was probably too much too early. You know, when you play Mike linebacker, you're essentially surrounded by 21 other people. And that's not where Jabril was most comfortable. He was comfortable in space. He liked the one-on-ones. You know, he liked to be able to track people down, to use his speed and agility to make plays, not be in the middle like that. But I think people saw it just burst of speed. And, you know, when he first got here in day one or day two, we always put our Tampa 2 package in, and to see him run the middle run through was pretty impressive. All of a sudden you got a 6'3", close to 6'4" athlete flying down the hash.
Yeah, kind of like Nick DeLuca in that way.
Yeah, I mean, big, long kid, but you're probably talking about someone who was 2/10 of a second faster than Nick DeLuca as well. Sure. So it just looked more impressive. I mean, it was just a different level of speed at that spot.
What is it about those? I know you're a defensive guy, but what is it about those ex-quarterbacks? You guys fed Esley Thornton, Jabril, I think, I can't remember if Grimsley was a high school quarterback or not, but obviously Jabril being a high school quarterback.
James Hendricks, yeah. Dan Marlette, all high school quarterbacks. You know, I think one, and I think I've mentioned this before, I really feel like those kids see the field better than other kids do. Because of being on the offensive side, they start to understand route concepts. They understand spacing. You know, where the hook is, where the curl is, you know, where they have a different awareness. And, not that it makes them ready-made defensive players, but it does allow them, I think, to make the transition, and it provides a little smoother transition. All the names that we threw out right here, had really seamless adjustments to the college game, minus maybe some of the physical development. But you talk about a guy like James, you know, was on the offensive side for a couple years here and was just too good an athlete to be there. And, man, he picked up what we did defensively, you know, it felt like in about a week's time. Jabril, you know, once we got him in the games in 2017, you could really see his understanding of football flourish as he got more and more reps and he got more and more comfortable.
I want to ask you specifically about the championship game against James Madison, because I thought at the time he really took over that game. The one, I think after the 2017 regular season, or like I said, the James Madison, the one with Easton starting, not the one with Trey starting, obviously. You guys spied Brian Shore with him, and he was something.
Yeah, 2017.
What went into that game plan and just your kind of impressions of his, for me, that was kind of his breaking out party where he just controlled the game.
Right. Well, he made a number of plays for us. You know, going into that game, it's funny you bring that up. For some reason, I don't know why, we saw bits and pieces of that or that game, or that game came back up in conversation. I know in 2016 when we played them, meaning JMU, we tried to defend them in all single high or in the two high defense, cover two, cover four, cover 10, the bracket stuff. And it didn't really, as you can remember, it didn't work very well. And so I wanted to make sure we took a different approach. And so we were going to play a ton of single high, and that meant he was going to be in some of our match coverage. He was going to potentially have to run with some verticals, carry some things out. We knew we wanted to bring him from the field. We felt like they didn't have a great mechanism of sliding their protection, especially if you brought an overhang player. So I bet in that game we probably brought him six or seven times during the course of, again, getting us to a single high defense where we thought, you know, we could defend what they wanted to do better. But he did. He made – there was the fumble recovery that he had, that he returned for a number of yards, just – and his ability to cover so much space out in that flat area defender area. You know, people see him, he's a big, long athlete, but he can get from point A to point B, as you saw yesterday with his pro day time. I mean, he ran a legit, you know, low 4.5s, and he'd probably argue he's faster than that yet. And he can make up a lot of ground. He can cover people. He can play big zone. And I think you saw in that game, we tried to utilize him as much as we could because we felt like he was a mismatch for them offensively.
I'm sure you've been asked about a million questions about Jabril Cox, the player, but when a area scout or a GM or a director of player personnel asks you about Jabril Cox, the person, what do you say?
Extremely, not necessarily, not an introvert, but very quiet, reserved, has a very tight circle of friends. You never heard of him going out and about and being in the social scene. Very family oriented. I don't know if you've ever met the Cox family. It's a large family, number of siblings. Mom and dad are outstanding people. And they were, his priority too, making sure that he was taken care of, getting things done, getting his degree while here at NDSU, so he could, help provide for his family at some point. But a sharp kid, great kid to be around. I know had a lot of time him over at the house a number of times with the linebackers or if it was with the defense, and always hugging Brenda, getting on the gaming system with the boys, a lot of trash talking going on in the basement.
You mentioned kind of your personal relationship with him, and I imagine it had to have been such a kind of conflicting situation when he does come into your office and mention the transfer situation and LSU. What was that like for you to have, obviously your position group, before he became the head coach, that had to have been somewhat bittersweet?
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it, Ross. It's always frustrating when you lose guys. And one of the things that you're always, it's a double-edged sword. You recruit kids, you develop them. They have a ton of talent. While other people, including themselves, their family, are taking notice, are taking inventory of all that success. And I think we recruit highly competitive young men to come here. Well, part of that competitiveness is there's, and a lot of them have a chip on their shoulder. Jabril, in his mind, if I wouldn't have got hurt in high school, I would have been at a Power Five. And I'm sure there was a piece of him that wanted to know, could I compete at that level? Because we had done everything we could to keep him here. We had talked to the NFL personnel. We had got him an NFL grade. At that time, following the 2018 season, they said he was a third or fourth rounder. And so, he probably has helped himself a little bit going down to LSU. And I know what's considered a frustrating year for them. He was one of the bright spots on the defensive side. But it was, the thing that probably that him and I talked about that made me understand a little bit is, and you can tell he was prepared when he came and talked to me. He goes, Coach, I've done everything you've asked for the 4 years that I've been here. I went to class. I got a degree. I won championships. And I had an unbelievable experience. And when you recruited me, those were the three things you challenged me. That's why I came here. And I've checked the box on all those. And, at that time, Ross, I really couldn't argue with it because he was exactly right. He had a great experience. His best friends to this day are still Bison. I know those guys, they game online and every night they're playing something. He won championships. He got personal accolades. And then he got that degree that he needed, and that was part of the deal that his parents wanted him to get as well. And so it's bittersweet when you see guys leave who you've created you and your family create such a great connection with.
Is there a specific, scheme fit that you see for him at the next level? Kind of a chase linebacker and a 3-4 or a nickel linebacker where he comes in passing situations. I mean, where do you see him kind of fitting with his skill set in the NFL game?
Well, the first, you talk kind of a hybrid edge guy / outside linebacker, maybe into the boundary for a 3-4 team. I could see him playing there. He has some of the bend requirements if you wanted to send him and engage him in some rush situations. I think he can play against tight ends. He can button blow and use his hands and set an edge. I don't know if in the NFL I would love to say he could play nickel, but you just don't see any nickels as big as him when you talk about 6'4", 235 pounds. You know, I would hope he might have the ability to play a little bit, maybe at a will linebacker in a 4-3 system, a guy who could potentially be out of the box, in the box. You know, the thing that he's got to continue to work on is just getting off blocks, you know, and being able to button press, especially at that level. You know, that's a violent in-the-box game at the NFL.
Yeah, I always told people that if you guys would have stuck him at defensive end, he would have been a double-digit sack guy.
Probably. I mean, he could have done a lot of things for us. I mean, I probably could have thrown him at corner and I'd have looked good. I mean, he was just that talented. And, you know, I remember there was a game, Ross, we talked about lining him up at corner and just rerouting the heck out of people. Or, you know, do you line him up at corner to be disruptive and then bring him off the edge and it's corner fire and the corner standing over the top of it? You know, you've seen us get into kind of a morph into some three down stuff. But he was always the guy we tried to utilize because we could create a mismatch. Some of our three down rush where he became the fourth, you know, recontained player. We could turn our three guys loose and he could just clean up whatever was left over. Not everyone can do that stuff, but, you know, we tried to use him as a decoy in some of our pressure things, line him to the field. And then all of a sudden we'd bring pressure to the boundary, knowing that people wanted to identify, hey, where was 42? And let's turn the protection his direction.
All right, one last one, and we appreciate the time, and then I'm going to let you go. Just give me, if I'm a GM, if I'm a head coach, I'm a decision maker in the NFL, just give me a 30-second pitch on Jabril Cox. Why am I taking him?
I still don't think he's scratched gotten close to where his ceiling is yet. I think you see just in his athleticism and his development from since he's been 18 years old up to now when he's 21, 22 years old, it's been leaps and bounds. I think in the next 3 or 4 years, that development's going to grow exponentially. He'll never embarrass your program. He'll do everything you ask. He can also serve on special. I think he'll be like Chris Board, and his first impact in the NFL will be on special teams, and it'll be on a number of teams. It'll be on punt D. It'll be on kickoff, and you'll see him have a huge impact for whomever gets him. So I see it as it's going to be a win-win for whichever defensive coordinator and special team coordinator is fortunate enough to land him.
All right, Coach, thanks so much for the time. I think you're going to have three guys on NFL teams by the end of Friday night, and then obviously good luck on Saturday.
Hey, I appreciate it, Ross. Thank you.
All right, just incredible. You know, we talked about appreciating Connor. Just so Bison fans know, like, Coach Ants took the time during a playoff game week to do that. So we cannot appreciate his time enough and the insight he was able to give us into the player and the person and kind of his experience with Jabril. You know, that's something that not every head football coach would do. And so we've definitely appreciate Matt's time and wish him and his crew the best of luck this weekend as they take on Sam Houston State. And frankly, as you know, many, many products of his development and his program's development go on to the next level. It's a big time weekend for North Dakota State. There is absolutely no question about it. All right, folks, hope you enjoyed the Mega Pod yesterday. Hope you enjoyed the Draft Pod today. And we will see you hopefully on Monday. Have a great weekend and go Bison.